expressed by the hosts of Black Talk Radio News and any guest represents their views and their views only, and do not necessarily represent the views of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network. And welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And today's date is August the 8th in the year that they call 2017. And I will be on this broadcast with you for the next 2 hours going up to the 10 o'clock hour. So thankful to all those who tune in and who place value on this network. And of course, I'm talking about Black Talk Radio Network, which is providing you with new media, new black media for the new millennium. We do have a couple of our brothers and sisters that are out there on the ground putting in work on behalf of the people. So we are blessed to be able to speak to them tonight, and I will definitely share that information. But before we get started, I do want to tell you about a couple of things right now. Many of you know about the program on the network, New Abolitionist Radio, which I have been hosting and producing along with Max Parthas and Johanna Elia for about the past 5 years. Johanna's probably been with us about maybe 3.5 and 4 years, but we have been coming to you every week for those 5 years telling you that slavery was never abolished in the United States, and that the 13th Amendment has an exception clause that makes it legal for them to put you into slavery or involuntary servitude as a so-called punishment for crime. And so, you know, I grew up like many other people believing the greatest lie I believe to ever have been told on the planet, and that's that the United States abolished slavery. So if you still believe that and you have not come into that knowledge, there's no shame, nothing to be ashamed of. Again, I only came into the knowledge about 5 years ago, even though this information has been out there at least that I know of since 1971 with the publication of Brother Lee Wood's book, Prison Slavery, in which he mentions the 13th Amendment. But of course, that, you know, type of information is often suppressed, and that real information that's telling you that real truth, it, you know, it's just not available for the masses. But for whatever reasons, other activists like myself, Max Parthas, we are Aliyah Yohanan, we aren't the only ones, have come into this same knowledge and come to the same conclusion that slavery was never abolished. So that is, there's going to be a march and a rally, just a short march and a rally in Lafayette Park, which is in Washington, D.C., right across the street from that White House that victims of slavery built. And we will be there for about 5.5 to 6 hours hosting a rally of abolitionist grassroots activists from all over the country. Max is one of the scheduled speakers, as well as a bunch of great other people. Pam Africa comes to mind. Just a whole lineup of people who have dedicated their lives to putting in work on this issue. And myself, I will be one of the moderators, also tasked with setting up the sound system and just doing whatever I can to make the event successful while everybody else focuses on what their message that they want to give to the people. And what's that message? That slavery was never abolished by the United States. What we're calling mass incarceration should be correctly called the continuation of slavery. It's just moved from the plantation to the prison. Okay, and so we are doing a fundraiser for that. We had an unexpected cost come up in terms of the PA system being able to be large enough to reach the amount of people that we need to reach. So that was an unexpected cost, but we hope that you will help us raise those funds. So you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. You will see the New Abolitionist Radio. It'll be a picture of myself and Max. If you click on that, that'll take you to the page for the fundraiser. We are also, the Black Talk Media Project, giving away a free membership, 1 year membership to our social media community, Black Talk Radio Community. That's at btrcommunity.com. We'll give you a one-year membership free for in exchange for a $24 donation to this fundraiser for the abolitionist trip. Dave so generously, that's Dave Attando Radio Show, that just went off the air, so generously offered the whole raffle for all the donors after the donation or the campaign has completed, and he will provide you with a free gift, a surprise gift from ProsperityMint.com. And ProsperityMint.com deals with a lot of products concerning precious metal. So we certainly thank Dave for stepping up in that way and helping us to raise these funds. So I just needed to put that out there. We probably raised close to $500, but we need another $1,000. So please give what you can. Again, we'll give you a BTR community membership in exchange. And thank you to those who have donated and say, hey, I don't want to be in the raffle. I don't want a t-shirt. I don't want anything. I just want you guys to be able to make it there. So I just want to thank those who have contributed thus far and those who said that they will give. All right. So let's get into what we have for you today. During the first hour, we will be speaking to a old friend of mine, an old associate who was with me at the beginning of the Black Talk Media Project and the launch of the Black Talk Radio Network, and that's Mr. Baba Jahi of Movements Unlimited Organization. He's joining us this first hour to discuss another Black News project that he and his wife are a part of, and it's called the National Black Unity News. Again, let me repeat that. That's the National Black Unity News. If you're on the broadcast page on Black Talk Radio Network, there's a link there to that website. Mr. and Mrs. Jahi are the national travel editors for the paper, which will be available or is available in different formats. Mr. Jahi says on the mission of this project, and again, this is the National Black Unity News, he says the mission of the paper is to promote unity in the national African American community in the world African community, to bring forth information that is not covered in mainstream media that helps our community grow and develop. So definitely we need to get behind all efforts to provide a credible and reliable news source for our people. Y'all know how I talk about corporate media has an agenda, and usually that agenda does not line up with the interests of the common people, and they practice a lot of deception. Media has been a very key tool in the system of slavery, practicing racism and white supremacy. And so there was an attack on Black radio stations back in 1996, and we lost a lot of terrestrial Black radio stations. I imagine along with the newspaper business, that Black-owned newspapers and produced newspapers are also suffering as a result. So whenever we have people step up with such projects to provide our people with real news and information that they could use, particularly with a interest towards the Black community, we have to get behind that, folks. We really, really do. Because y'all know what it's like out there. Now, the second hour, we will hear from Miss Crystal Roundtree. Miss Roundtree is the co-founder and director of I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, and she is the chairperson of the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Organizing Committee, which has organized the upcoming Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Rally and March, which will take place in Washington, D.C., again in Lafayette Park across from the White House that Victims of Slavery built. And again, that will be on August the 19th, 2017. Let me give out that telephone number as we get ready to bring on Baba Jahi to share this project, this Black News project, with us. But if you have any questions after he finished giving us the information that he needs to relay to our listening audience. Please feel free to call in with any questions or comments related to the National Black Unity News. That telephone number is 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056. Once you're on the board, if you have a question or comment, hit ** to unmute yourself. Please watch your background noise. As soon as I notice you on the board, I will bring you in. And just also, we will be talking about some of the latest national and international news stories that caught my eye during this first part of the week. But without further delay, I want to welcome on my old comrade from back in the day, from 2008, at the very beginning of Black Talk Radio Network in the Black Talk Media Project, Mr. Baba Jahi. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Good evening, Scotty. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing the best I can, surviving behind these enemy lines, and I don't like to complain too much about what I'm suffering personally, Brother Baba Jahi, because as you know, there are people doing far worse than me.
Yes, sir. I understand that. And again, it's good to be on these airways with you. I remember when you started Black Talk Media Project and Black Talk Radio. At that time, we were involved with Blog Talk Radio, and you were a key person in sharing a lot of information with a lot of the Blog Talk Radio black show hosts to, you know, getting people to address the issue of why it's so important in terms of black media and why we need to get our messages out there, you know, so that our community can be empowered. And, you know, I remember getting started with Blog Talk Radio in November 2007 and then getting connected with you. And we lost a trooper. We lost Queenie Farmer last year. She passed last year. And, you know, the network of people that I met through working with you in the project, you know, has always been uplifting and fulfilling. You know, and I learned so much from you in terms of media and the whole approach to making sure we get good content out and making sure we're on top of our stories and, you know, making sure that our community gets informed. And it's very good that, you know, you're pointing out to people about the information concerning the 13th Amendment. We've been showing here down in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. We had a viewing last week of the movie 13th, and those people that haven't seen that, I highly recommend that people see that movie. You can watch it on Netflix. Another good one is the PBS document, Slavery by Another Name, which deals with the whole convict leasing system, which became another form of slavery. I know you already probably just shared this with people before on another broadcast, but how the South was rebuilt after the Civil War through incarcerating African Americans.
Yes,
so it's good that that information is getting out and that people are rallying to make people aware as we tackle those issues. Our project that we're working on, gone from being working on to actually being implemented now, is the National Black Unity News. And we put out our promotional copy, came out in May. Our first copy that will hit the streets as far as regular issue will be October 1. And as you mentioned, you gave people the links or on your site that people can go and get information about the paper. And the, again, for us, the paper is, again, like what Marcus Garvey had, the Negro World. I mean, and Garvey had, as we talk about those of us that's part of the paper, Garvey had 200,000 issues of his paper being circulated monthly without no Facebook, without no technology, without all of the stuff that we have going on today. And, you know, it was, his paper was smuggled out of the United States, all around the world. And it's so important to understand that, because as I was sharing with somebody the other day, just in terms of another history point, is that Ho Chi Minh, he had a UNIA membership card. How did we find that out? When Kwame Ture went to Vietnam in the 60s as part of protesting against the war, and he went to Vietnam and met with Ho Chi Minh, Ho Chi Minh pulled out his Garvey card. Because in the 20s, when Ho Chi Minh was in Harlem, he used to go to the UNIA meetings and got connected with Marcus Garvey and the Black Liberation Movement. So the power of a newspaper is so, so powerful. It can reach so many people. I mean, you know, the paper Garvey had was in different languages, was smuggled. So that's eventually the thing we're going to have to be looking at with our paper, is how to put it in more than just English. Because we do have a couple of people that are editors, national editors on the paper, that have connections with Africa. And we're looking at how to spread this message not only globally, not only nationally here in the United States, but also globally. And what do? We promote black businesses that don't get promoted on an everyday basis. We make sure we cover issues that are not, as I said, you know, in my mission piece, that are not covered by mainstream media that affects African Americans and African people in the diaspora, and then African people on the continent. So again, it's very, very important. And, you know, part of our motto, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? You know, we have to make sure that we prioritize getting proper information out to people. And what I need to do at this point is give kudos to some of the key staff people of the newspaper, the national publisher, which is a great friend of mine, Mr. David L. Murphy. We used to do a newspaper back in the day in Baltimore called The Informer. And The Informer was like a local newspaper we had in Baltimore. And the title said, we were about informing black people in the city of Baltimore about issues that was going on. And we used to have youth that sold our newspaper. And we're going to be doing that again with this newspaper right now. The promotional copy we put out, gave that out to people for free. But we will be putting a price tag on the regular hard copy when it hits the streets in October. It'll be $2 for the paper. And Mr. Murphy, again, I said, is the national publisher. And his call to action was the following in our newspaper: calling all soldiers. Calling all soldiers from every area and profession. The battle is raging. Too many of our people are being murdered. Too many are incarcerated, and masses are miseducated and misinformed. The enemies are using weapons of mass destruction in a systematic discrimination, propaganda, hatred, media, and much more. We need all soldiers to report for duty, because their forces are advancing and destroying everything that our ancestors have so bravely fought for. We need every man, woman, and child to take a vigilant stand to combat those forces and spirits that seek to eliminate us like they did the indigenous people that were on this land before the Europeans arrived. This is a call for action. And we can no longer turn the other cheek and accept status quo. We can no longer sit and do nothing while our children's future are being destroyed. We can no longer accept being second and third class citizens after the debt we paid to make this nation great. We must and we have to put up a united front in order to stop the flow of mass destruction. We need our educators to teach. We need our entrepreneurs to build a strong economic front. We need our politicians to legislate new policies. We need our religious communities to speak truth to power. We need our generals and street soldiers to man the front lines. We need you. We need every able-bodied man, woman, and child to fight the good fight until the victory is won. This war is real. There are many casualties seen and unseen. The fact is that there is a systematic plan in place to destroy us and to keep us in bondage. We have to stop being reactive and in defensive mode, and we have to be active and create an offense to advance our people. Soldiers, we have to fight with every ounce of courage, and we must create a united front. We have to join forces and focus on things that unite us, not things that separate us. For such a time as this, we need all who call themselves conscious or soldiers to come together on one accord to defeat this enemy that seeks to destroy us all. This is not a drill. This is warfare. That's Mr. Murphy's message that he has in the opening of the paper. And next we have the national editor, Mr. Bill Gooden, who's an activist and author, a publisher, and an organizer. And he sort of echoes Mr. Murphy's message. He talks about, again, the importance of having unity in our community. And one of the things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to say is that our unity is like no force ever known. He said, if we unite, he said, it's more powerful than an atomic bomb. And that's why things are done to keep us disunited, have us focus on what we disagree about as opposed to what we agree about. And so we set a united front that we're talking about unity without uniformity. What do we mean by that? Everybody's not going to do the same thing. But if we come together and agree not to disagree, but to agree on what we can agree about, then we can make the changes that need to be done in our community. And as I said, as you said, me and my wife, we're the national travel editors. Our responsibility to the paper is to make sure that our people know what's going on in the world of travel. And I'm just hoping that they don't start nuking each other, North Korea and America, because it's not going to be safe to travel any daggone where. But, we do is we, me and my wife, we make sure that people know where to go and how to get there and what's safe and what's going on in different places. Because I don't know if you saw the article recently about the young black man who was in Greece and got attacked by a white mob. And they killed him.
Yes, I saw that.
We need to know what's going on in different countries and what the atmosphere is like and how people feel. Because, we can think we have arrived and, I got the money, I got my passport, I'm going to go to such and such place. Yeah, well, you might get there, and it can be worse than going into Mississippi. So it's important that me and my wife, what we do is to make sure that we keep people abreast of what's going on in the world of travel, how to take advantage of travel deals, but more than anything else, how to be safe. And at the most recent NAACP convention, the NAACP has came out and put out a travel advisory about the state of Missouri. They said travel is the whole risk. So, people need to look at that advisory and see why did the NAACP say that? Why are they telling people you're black, travel in Missouri at your own risk? I mean, there's some things that are going on that we need to always, stay abreast of and know what's happening so that we don't be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's part of my wife's responsibility is to help people find travel deals, but more than anything else, to help them be safe. There was a gentleman back in the 50s who had
the Green
a
magazine
book called Hugo Green.
Yeah.
And Hugo Green had a magazine that he used to put out telling black people how to travel through the South and where to stop and where to be safe. And you got to remember back during those days, that was during segregation. So we weren't staying in no hotels and other kind of stuff unless it was a black hotel, which we have lost a lot of those. I mean, things that we had gained, we've lost through integration. And I know some people say, well, but integration was supposed to be a good thing. Yeah, well, we lost the most. Black businesses that we had, it went under because people got so excited about being able to spend their money with white folks that we stopped supporting our own. Mr. Green, he had a thing that he put out advising black people where to travel when they went through the South, where to stop, where to be cautious at, who they could stay with as they was on the road, because that during that time, people basically drove, had their car, people got their cars, was excited about being able to travel and go visit places and go see people. But you had to know when to travel, when to be safe. And it takes me back to my activist days when the brothers in SNCC, you know, they used to travel around in the state of Mississippi, and what they needed to do when they was doing the voter registration is that during the daytime, they couldn't travel because they would be targeted by the Klan. So they would travel at night and had to learn how to ride through cornfields, backfields, other kind of stuff to get to places to be able to engage people in voter registration, in which they took and changed that state. And we know some of the great people that came out of that process, the great Fannie Lou Hamer, who when they put together the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and when they went to Atlantic City to protest about their seats that they were supposed to have as opposed to the white racists from Mississippi. So, you know, so there's a lot of history in travel. There's a lot of history in news. There's a lot of history in activism, and there's a lot of history in what we as black people need to do, and we don't need to be going backwards. Backwards never, forwards forever. So, you know, and it's so important, especially as, you know, this most recent election that we had where we got, you know, the whole racist administration just so overtly racist, you know, like nothing I've ever seen before. I mean, not to say that any of the other presidents were the greatest presidents in America, but I mean, they just weren't out there. They were more closet in what they did and what they're doing. Where this boy, he just right out in the front. So it's important to we have a media network that keeps us informed so that we know what we need to do and how we need to do what we need to do. So that's sort of a backdrop of the paper and a backdrop of what me and my wife do with the paper. And, you know, we're looking to spread this paper all across the United States. We have national editors. We'll be looking for local editors and state editors because we want information not just on the national level that we're able to give out to people, but what's going on in people's states, what's going on in their immediate surroundings, stuff that we don't hear about every day. And one of the things that's been great is with Facebook and the use of social media and Facebook Live and with these cell phones, people are recording stuff and putting it on social media that we normally wouldn't even hear about. You know, we just wouldn't hear about it till way afterwards. So I'm excited about technology and how we can use the technology for positive propaganda and put our message out there, because the whole purpose of news is propaganda. And we need to make sure that we're putting out positive propaganda that enlightens our people, empowers our people, because the bottom line issue is, if we had power, and what is power? Power is the ability to make people do what you want, even when they don't like you. That's the real issue for us as African Americans in this country, is how do we seize power so that we can make people respond to our need, even if they don't like us. So back to you, Scott, in case you have any questions.
Yes, I do have some questions, and you raised several points there, and I'll try to get to those, but I also want to open up the phone lines if anybody has any questions or comments for our guest tonight, Mr. Baba Jahi. Again, he's here representing the National Black Unity News. Him and his wife I have known for a number of years and were instrumental in helping me get Black Talk Media Project off the ground. But tonight he's here to talk about the National Black Unity News, which he says it's already out. It's already out. It's up and running. Okay, and the first official issue will come out in October. That's correct?
That's correct, yes, sir.
Yes. Now, let me ask you, will this be like a bi-weekly, weekly, monthly issue, publication? I know you mentioned the price of $2, but how often per month will a issue be published?
I believe we're looking at a once-a-month format, because by the time we get with the local, the national editors, and the state editors, then the publication we have right now is like close to like 30 pages. But by the time we put all of that content together, because we'll have national editors for each category, local editors for each category of the paper. We already got national editors for each category of the paper. Is that we'll probably end up with more of a journal than a paper.
Mm-hmm.
We got our media packets. I think, I don't know if I sent you one of those or not. I think I did. If I didn't, I'll make sure I send you one of my advertising prices and all of that in there. And, you know, we've been getting a lot of calls for people who want to put in ads in the paper to promote what they're doing. Basically, we started off with advertisement from people where the paper was initially grounded, founded, which is in Baltimore, Maryland, and it was an outpour of a group called Black Men, Unifying Black Men, which Mr. Murphy, Mr. Bill Gooden are both part of, and I'm also part of that group also. And we have a meeting we do once a month in Baltimore where we normally have anywhere from 75 to 100 to sometimes 150 black men from different walks of life who meet once a month to discuss issues that are going on in our community and how to connect and rally around those issues. So we'll be probably doing a once a month format. I will be checking with Mr. Murphy. I know he's coming out in October because we're working to get the October issue together as we speak, because people's articles have got to be submitted by the 15th of August for the October issue. And I'm out right now soliciting ads from different organizations and people who are looking to advertise in the paper.
Now, the paper, I mentioned earlier, and I hope correctly, that it will be available in several different formats. Will that be like a digital copy as well as a hard copy?
We'll have a digital copy. Yes, sir. We'll have a digital copy also. That's because there'll be some places that we won't be able to get a hard copy to initially, because we're looking at, again, you know, being cost effective and
mm-hmm.
shipping out papers to all of those different places we want to, you know, to get to, unless, you know, people picking up their costs. So, you know, the online copy will probably be the most available copy, but mm-hmm. we do have hard copies, and we will be mailing those out or whatever. I got to get a hard copy to you, because I did send you the digital copy, but I want you to see the hard copy too, because what I've been doing with my hard copies, my wife has been doing, we go to our page in the paper and we autograph it and give it out to people, because again, it's a historical document. It takes me back again to the whole, you know, connection of black media, from Freedom Ways to the North Star to, you know, I mean, we have a rich history and legacy.
Yes, we do.
Of media.
Yes.
In this country.
Yes, a number of our leaders identified the power of media, and of course, you know, Baba Jahi, that I got the idea of creating a Black Talk Media Project from watching Malcolm X give an interview and talk about the power of media. And my favorite quote is, media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It controls the minds of the masses. It can make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent, and that's power. So Malcolm X, of course, you know, the Nation of Islam has a paper that they've been long putting out. You mentioned Marcus Garvey, the Negro World. You mentioned a couple of the abolitionist papers that were started by black abolitionists. Even the Black Panther Party had a national newspaper that they were using to fund many of their survival programs. So you are exactly right. There is a tradition of black media on this continent, but it goes even further than that, you know, to our ancestral roots of sharing information and stories word by mouth. I think they call those people griots or griots.
Griots.
Yes, sir. So, I mean, I'm very excited to see this come out. So, what will we have to sign up for a subscription? Like you said, $2 what per issue? Or what would that be, a $24 a year subscription? Or how do y'all plan to price that?
I gotta look at the media package again and see what the subscription price is. But yes, we will have subscriptions, because that was one of the things that I was really concerned about when we launched this. Was, you know, my thing is subscriptions. I mean, subscribers is what the thing is nowadays in terms of media publications and stuff like that. Is how many subscribers do you have? And so we will be having subscriptions that people will be able to get, you know, subscription, get a digital copy, and I'll make sure I email you that information so that you'll have what the numbers are on that, and, you know, for people that want to follow up, how they can contact us and be able to get a subscription to the paper.
Now, you talked about the travel section that you and your wife will be working on, because y'all have a long history of actually working in the travel industry, but that you said it was going to be more than just like your typical travel and leisure magazines, but that you will also be letting people know what areas of the world that they might want to avoid. And you used the example of the young college student who was killed in Greece by a gang of thugs, you know, at a bar and what have you. And I actually saw where people were asking the question, well, how come the United States State Department has not issued a travel advisory for Americans? Well, because, you know, the obvious answer is, well, he's a black American, quote unquote American. So maybe they don't feel like it's important to warn black Americans about hot spots around the world. So that's great that you'll be bringing that up, because I actually had done like a little short commentary on the racism of Conor McGregor, who's supposed to be in this well-publicized fight with what's his name? I can't even recall his name right now.
Floyd Money Mayweather.
Yeah, Floyd Mayweather. And I was pointing out that this McGregor dude got a history of racism, right? And so I came across an article after I did what I, you know, said what I had to say about his racism. And, you know, people talking about, well, Irish people can't be racist. Well, guess what? When you come over here, you're classified as white. You're not Irish. You're functioning as a white person in the system of slavery, practicing racism and white supremacy. But there was an Irish sports writer who published an article. And no, it wasn't that sports writer. Somebody left a comment on my video pointing out that there was a Irish organization that tracked racism in the country. And like in 1 year, there were over 100 incidents of terrorism directed at Afro-descended people from, no matter where they, you know, from Africa or from the United States. And so I think that would be a very important piece that is well worth your time, and I'm glad that this will be included.
Yeah, because there's, you know, the other thing is that's going on is the human trafficking thing, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of African women on the continent who are being trafficked, you know, as far as the sex trade. Well, I don't even call it a trade. They're kidnapped and they're forced, you know, into sexual relations with people. And, you know, a lot of that was going on once Gaddafi was killed and taken out of Libya. And then also, you know, Saudi Arabia has a history of that. But, I mean, you know, and it's important, you know, people know these things, because you could have a young, pretty daughter, she's going on a trip somewhere, don't know the terrain, you know, and forget that they're not in America no more, jump in a cab, you know, hoping to get to their destination. They don't know really where they're going. They put the little GPS thing in their phone and hope that the cab driver's taking them to where they need to go. But you never know what's going on, because if you don't know the terrain and know the people, anything could happen. Like a friend of mine told me, he was in Punta Cana, and he said he had left the resort, and him and his buddy had got a cab, and the cabbie, he said, you know, was taking them somewhere, and he said, you know, he said they had to do an old move like you do back in the hood, said, because they didn't feel safe. So the cab stopped somewhere, and they jumped out the cab and found their way back to the resort because they felt they was about to be kidnapped. So it's important, again, in terms of the travel piece, is you have to know where you're going. You have to know the terrain. It takes me back to my days in the military, is that you need to know where you're at. I had some good experiences, and I had some wild experiences. When I was stationed in the Philippines, I knew there was this one road that if you went out on, that you could get attacked by baboons, and the baboons would whip your behind. I mean, actually whip your behind. And then I remember being in the Philippines, and when I got a chance to get away from the bars and the other places and meet the real Filipinos, that was an experience in itself, an eye-opening experience that never left me, because I never forget a conversation I had one time with some of the elder Filipinos, and they asked me, say, how would you feel if I came to your country and the only way your mother, your wife, your daughter, your sister, your auntie, the only way they could get work, they have to be prostitutes for me? Because in America, you know, and you've been in the military, you know how America turns these countries out in terms of the women and how they get exploited, and the whole sex trade thing that goes on, you know, for GIs. I remember reading something where when people was in Kuwait, if they had to bring, they brought in some prostitutes for people, because the Kuwaiti women, they weren't into that. So,
right.
Bottom line is, you got to know where you're at, where you're going, and what's going on. And, you know, because too often, see, we in an ideal world, and we say, well, how did that happen? You need to know the terrain.
I have to ask you, because right now, if I was to advise somebody on travel, I would say don't travel to the Philippines right now. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but Baba Jahi, but I call him Mad Dog Duterte. That's their president now, Rodrigo Duterte. And they are pulling people who either have a substance abuse problem or suspected of selling illegal substances, and they're not getting a trial. They're just getting dragged out in the street and shot in the head. I mean, what do you think about that?
You know, it's a form of, you know, of mismanaged injustice. So you have to know what's going on in the country before you go to a country. I mean, it's just like people, they check out this country, you know, and before they come here. And I never forget, like I said, a couple of my Nigerian friends who went to college with, you know, they set them up real nice. They had, because one friend of mine's name was Azina Oku. And Azina, when he came to America at the University of New Orleans, before he got enrolled in college, they had him stay with a white family. You know, they showed him all of the beauty stuff in New Orleans. Me and him got together, I took him to the projects. He said, these are Bantustans, man. I didn't know they had Bantustans in America. But he never, you know, because they was told American streets was paved with gold, that black people were lazy, and the reason we didn't have certain things is because we didn't want to work, this, that, and the other. But if you came here and you worked hard, you could become rich. And so, you know, the propaganda, again, in terms of the media, what's put out there to people, and, you know, how people interpret that. Basically what you're saying in terms of right now, in terms of the Philippines, any of those kind of countries. I mean, you know, when I heard about the thing with the young man in Greece, you know, I already knew about some of the racial feelings and stuff that people have in Greece. And I was saying, you know, wow. I said, you know, he went there. I said, where was his backup? Who was, you know, I mean, if you're going to go to some of these places, and if you're going at your own risk, you definitely need to have yourself a support system, a backup. It reminds me, like in the movie Get Out, you know, which, one of my favorite movies that just recently came out, you know, I mean, you know, he calls a guy, you know, guys, man, you better get out of there, you know. But, I mean, sometimes you're not that fortunate to be able to get out, so don't go in.
That's true, and then you look at who he went over there with, and it's not surprising that none of them come to his defense, and they weren't people that looked like him.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things, though, in terms of, I appreciate what you said earlier, because I view Black Talk Radio Network this way as well. You know, since 2008, we have grown. It first started with just this program, Black Talk Radio News. Then the second program came maybe 8 or 9 months later. That's the context of white supremacy. But since that first year, You know, we've had programs and stations, people running their own stations, like the Context of White Supremacy has their own station, but they work off of the platform. You know, people come and gone, but, you know, we have a pretty diverse lineup of programs and stations and podcasters, and I don't agree with everything that's said on the network. And, you know, I like I tell people, I don't even agree with my mama 100% on everything. So we're not going to agree 100% on everything. But what I do agree with is that you have a right to speak your truth. You have a right to put out your information uncensored. And you deserve a safe space to do it. So I think that goes a long way towards fostering unity, to just resign ourselves to the fact that we're not going to agree with each other on 100% on everything. But if we agree on the most important thing, who the enemy is and what he's doing, then that's most important right there. And we'll find the other, you know, issues where we can agree on and focus on those and work together on those and lay the other stuff to the side.
Yeah, what you said is important, because I found years of doing stuff is that if we work together, what happened is things that we disagreed about, we eventually will come to an agreement about something concerning that issue. But usually what happens is, for people who don't want to really work on having unity, is least little thing that they disagree with somebody about, and they said, I can't work with so-and-so. Why you can't work with them? Well, I don't like this. And I don't like that. You know, like you said, I don't agree with my parents on everything. I love them dearly, but I don't agree with them on everything. You know what I mean? So, if I were to take that attitude, I'd never show up for Thanksgiving. Never show up for anything that my family has. But you know, I show up because out of everything that I might disagree with my family about, there's so much that I agree with them about, and there's so much love that I have for them, because you got three kinds of people in the world, and you got to figure out who these three kinds of people are in your life. You got your shareholders. Your shareholders are those people, you do something for them, they do something for you. You got your stakeholders. Your stakeholders are those people, they support you irregardless, because they just like you and they just love you that much that whatever you do, they support you. That's a precious group of people. Then you got your placeholders. These are people, they got a place in your life, but they don't know what, don't know where. And in most cases, your placeholders are the ones that bring you down. So the people that's important to strengthen your bonds with is your shareholders and your stakeholders. And that's just so important. I found that to be, you know, universal in terms of things that I do. I always ask myself when I'm working with somebody, are they a shareholder, a stakeholder, or a placeholder? And hopefully they're a shareholder or a stakeholder, because that's the people that I really want to connect with. Placeholders, they're dangerous people, because you don't know what they're going to do.
Unstable.
Plus, they don't know. Yeah. They don't know what they're going to do.
Right, right. Unstable. We do have a call out of the Virginia area. We got Brother Otis that would like to chime in with a question or comment. Brother Otis, you're on with my good friend, Mr. Baba Jahi.
Nice to meet you, Brother Baba Jahi.
Yes, sir. Nice to meet you, sir. What's your question?
Well, I was going to compliment you because you're starting a newspaper, and I just want to let you know I'm 64 years old. When I went out into the military, I got a subscription to the Norfolk Journal and Guide. I grew up right here in Yorktown, Virginia, about 30 miles away, and the importance of Black news that kept me in touch with what was going on. I was out in Arizona and Texas, but I still knew what was going on at home. And I also had an uncle that lived in Baltimore, and I used to go to his repair shop, and he kept the Informer there. So we had some ties. I just wanted to let you know I'm glad somebody's getting into that area.
Okay, yeah, sir. I'm 65 and a Vietnam vet. So, you know, I've seen a lot. And, you know, so you say your uncle had a repair shop in Baltimore. What part of Baltimore?
Yes, sir. And I used to go up to the summer sometimes for like 10, 14 days with him. He had the Informer at the counter of his shop. And I also served in the Air Force, but I was in Titan missiles, so I didn't do the Vietnam, but I was in that era, and I sit on the ground, and we used to get a lot of reports back and forth in 72 about what the Air Force had done there. So I didn't experience it, but I was well aware of some of the atrocities that were going on. I just wanted to get a positive shout out.
All right, I appreciate the shout out, you know, and that's another area of information that's so important. I mean, Wallace Terry, he did a piece back in the day on blacks who served in Vietnam or was in Vietnam at the time. A lot of people don't know, in Vietnam at the time, you had the Black Panther Party had a chapter of their organization there, an organization that I became involved with, the US organization that created Kwanzaa. We had a chapter in Vietnam. And again, news is so important because in Vietnam they had a place called LBJ, Long Binh Jail. In Long Binh Jail, basic population was mostly brothers who had been locked up in Vietnam. So news is so important that, you know, to get information out. And all of us have a story. That's the other thing. All of us have a story. And so our goal is to make sure that we get those stories published out there, because you never know how your story can affect somebody else's life.
Before we conclude our interview, again, thank you for joining me tonight on short notice, Brother Baba Jahi. It's been, and you, obviously I spoke to you before tonight, but it's good to, you know, just have another long conversation with you, because we used to have many of these conversations, you know, at the beginning of when we launched this mission to get black radio hosts to work together and stop being in competition with one another. Let's all come, you know, together under one umbrella, and let's do the damn thing. And so, you know, here you are doing the damn thing with another collective of black media producers with this much needed paper. But again, tell people how they will be able to get the paper, and what are some of the things that they can expect in those issues.
Okay, hold on, I gotta pull up the website.
Okay, well, while you do that, I think Otis wanted to chime in with another comment. Did you have another comment, Otis?
Yeah, I was going to say, he was talking about the Black Panthers in Vietnam. When I tell you, I was in Titan Missiles, so there wasn't a lot of brothers there, and I sit underground in Missile Silo. We started a group based off of airmen coming back and telling us what was going on, called the Brotherhood Association of Military Airmen, BAMA. And we were really active there in the Tucson area, and we based it off of the Panthers' logic. We started going into the black neighborhood and the Hispanic neighborhoods where they told us to keep out of because they were so rough. We started going into those neighborhoods and help with daycare and going on Saturdays to repair people's homes and stuff. And that's the mentality our people need to get back to. This individualism and not understanding that this is a multi-pronged fight. You can't be bickering over some slight or power struggle with people. Because if you got a platform you believe in, you need to push on that area and look for friends and comrades. You can't be trying to critique and tear down somebody else's unless what they're doing is undermining the crux of what the battle is. The battle is for us to be free and be able to produce on our own and enjoy all of the American privilege.
Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct. I remember being aboard ship, and when we took up a collection for Angela Davis, you know, and the white folks say, y'all raising money for that communist, you know, and they called her a B, but y'all raising money for that communist black B, y'all crazy, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, and to me, and it, there used to be a lot aboard the ship I was on, the USS Constellation, CVA-64, attack aircraft carrier, there used to be a lot of racial fights. We had, at the time, they had to bring in we came back to port. They had to bring in Congressman Ron Dellums to try to de-squash the racist stuff that was going on. I mean, you know, you'd have pilots who would, you know, the person directing the plane on top of the ship, and they tell them the plane to turn right, plane turns left, if the plane turns left, if you're within 35 feet of that jet engine, you're going to get sucked up into the engine. So, I mean, you know, we had a lot of stuff that would be going on, and, you know, and brothers began to rebel against the system. I ended up getting a general discharge under honorable conditions because I refused to go to work. I said, I'm going on a work stoppage. But that's a whole nother story. But the bottom line is that the social activism, the issues that are going on, I mean, because that's another thing that I really want to be able to touch upon in the paper is what's going on with our current blacks in the military. Because I know there got to be some blacks in the military who are socially active, the same as when during the time period that I was involved in the military. And I'd like to know what's going on today and their stories, and because I know it exists, because the racism in the military is, I mean,
right,
it's incredible. I mean, I never forget the captain of the ship telling me, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you. You know, we made provisions for you people. You got a good MOS, you know, because I was the Aviation Maintenance Administration. My job was to assign the people who would work on planes, whether it was the hydraulic system. My job was to listen to a plane, figure out what's wrong with it, and then assign to the proper mechanic, or you know, what was something wrong with the engine, something wrong with the hydraulics. And then for a long time, when I got out of the military, I couldn't fly commercial flights because I could listen to a plane and I could tell you what, when the last time it was serviced, or, you know, if it makes too much noise and the wheels, when they go up and you hear a big thump, something's wrong with the hydraulic system because they ain't been serviced properly. Mm. So I used to be real paranoid about flying planes because that was my MOS in the military.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's when I really started coming into consciousness, although, you know, through certain music, again, the power of media. But certain music artists, like I was really big on Prince in back in the day, and I know that his content is highly sexualized, but he also will be dropping some nuggets of knowledge in there. So that was like a little inkling of consciousness that I had gotten from that. But once I got into the military and Public Enemy, you know, came out and doing what they did, and they told me about Malcolm X. I had heard of Malcolm X, but they really made me interested in Malcolm X. Then when I ended up in the Gulf War, I'm reading Malcolm X's biography. And by the time I finished that, I knew my military career was finished. So, but, you know, I had a group of, I'm serious, I was not going to re-up after that. But, you know, it was a group of us, black brothers, you know, that was in my unit. And, you know, we were on our path to consciousness. But if we had access to more conscious media, then who knows how it wouldn't have took Scotty Reed until he was like doggone in his late 40s to figure out that the 13th Amendment didn't abolish slavery, and we still dealing with that issue. So again, that is very important. If y'all have family members that's in the military, get them a subscription. Get them a subscription to this publication that's coming out. So again, we're talking about the National Black Unity News, and Mr. Jahi is with us representing them, and he's one of the travel editors along with his wife, Cynthia, on that. So did you get that information pulled up, Brother Jahi?
Yeah, here's how people can get a digital copy of the promotional issue. They can go to www.thenationalblackunitynews.com/NATLK promo issue.pptx.
And that's the digital copy, right?
That's the digital copy. They can get that. They get that. All the other information that they need about the paper will be in there. And if people need to reach me, they can give me a call or text me at 252-458-3712. That's 252-458-3712, and say, I need information about the National Black Unity News, and I'll make sure that I text that information out to people or give you a call and you know, just share with people more, because we really want to get this out. And I said, you know, having this conversation tonight, it just made me think about some more things, especially to say, you know, the military piece, because I know that there's some people in the military that need to have a copy of this paper in their hand, so that when they come back home, as Curtis Mayfield used to say in 1973 when he had his album out, Back to the World, he used to call it, you know, we would leave and we come back, you know, we're coming back to the world. We call it the world. We come back to the world. You need to know what's going on. Marvin Gaye, what's going on? Hey, I'm just getting back, but I knew I would. War is hell. When will it end? Will our people start to get together again? Is it really true what the newspapers say? I mean, you know, that's a song that came out before I went, got shipped off to Nam. But I remember that, and the movie Shaft came out before we left to go to Vietnam. So I'm just saying, you know, the power of the media, movies, all of that, had a tremendous impact and influence on my life, my journey, and my personal development. So the media is important, and it's important that we control our media. So again, Scotty, you know, hey, glad to see that you're still in existence, moving forward, and, you know, it's good to have this conversation, and, you know, we'll have many more conversations. Don't always have to be on the airways, but, you know, just in terms, I'm really curious as how y'all event going to turn out. Y'all going to be participating in D.C., and if I'm back up in the Baltimore, Washington area at the time, I will make sure I get over there to be supportive. And send me, Scotty, when you get a chance, send me the donation link so that I can send a donation.
All right, I will most certainly do that. Again, it was good speaking with you, Brother Baba Jahi. And actually, you know, if it's going to be a monthly publication coming out, you know, I definitely want to help y'all promote that, you know, do some collaborative things. But certainly would like to have you or your wife come on at least once a month, you know, to just give us some highlights of what people, why people, some of the stories that they should look for that's going to be in that publication. Anything we could do to help y'all with y'all circulation.
All right, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, Brother Baba Jahi, did you have any final comments?
I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, and really appreciate being back on these airways with you. And, you know, you know, you're special to me because, you know, I remember, you know, the things, the trials and tribulations we went through with getting the Black Talk Media Project together, and also the mini grant that we worked on back in 2010, March to the Mailboxes with the Census Program, and, you know, it's working together on that. And so, you know, looking forward to how to do all of that kind of stuff again. So just again, thank you real much.
All right. And give your wife our greetings from the network, and you stay safe behind these enemy lines.
All right, brother.
All right, that was Brother Baba Jahi, again, representing the National Black Unity News. You can go online to the nationalblackunitynews.com, particularly check out page 4, but you'll find all that information. You could download the promotional copy of the paper, which is in digital form. And definitely, we got to subscribe. We got to subscribe because, I don't know, some people just seem to think that all this stuff is free, you know. And like Dave Attando Radio Show says, you know, cost of something is not just in dollars and cents, you know. It's energy as well. And we have people who come together in these projects and they pour all of this energy into these media projects on the behalf of the people. And I'm just going to be real. We just need more people to step up and support those projects that are beneficial to our worldwide Black community. It's just no doubts about that in my mind. So definitely we will be supporting the National Black Unity News. It was good to speak to Mr. Jahi again. So we're going to take a station identification break, and then on the other side, we will listen to a pre-recorded interview I conducted earlier. She wasn't able to join us live because she's busy trying to get the details wrapped up for the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March, which will occur in Washington, D.C. on August the 19th. Again, that will be in the park called Lafayette Park, that's across the street from that White House that victims of slavery built. We hope that Mr. Trump will be on the premises as we try to make as much noise as possible to issue our demand for end to 21st century slavery and human trafficking legalized through that document they call the U.S. Constitution. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, my name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is, today's date is August the 8th, 2017. So we're just about 11 days out from this historic abolitionist gathering, probably the first and largest of its kind since before the 13th Amendment was passed and that lie was issued to the world that they had abolished slavery. How can you abolish something and make an exception for it at the same time? That's not even grammatically correct, I don't believe, and I'm not an English professor or anything, but that just doesn't make grammatical sense to me to say that I'm abolishing something. But, oh, by the way, we're going to have a little exception, you know, under these certain conditions. Well, you haven't abolished it according to the dictionary definition of abolition or to abolish, which means to eradicate, to eliminate, to destroy. Okay. And no, there's no exceptions to when I obliterate something. There are no exceptions. If I'm destroying something, I'm destroying it in its totality. I'm not making exceptions. And so we are telling the world, but primarily the current occupant of that White House that victims of slavery built, that the jig is up. Okay? You pulled the wool over the eyes of the people long enough, and we need to do something here about this problem of y'all still practicing slavery. All right, so I had an opportunity, and again, do want to let you know, we are having a fundraiser for New Abolitionist Radio, which was launched 5 years ago to bring this information to the world and that central message that slavery was never abolished. And we do need some donations. We need to get a van. We need to get a PA system. We'll be staying in the hotel that first night, but that second night we'll be staying with some local activists. So, please donate what you can. Again, we are giving a 1-year subscription to BTR Community in exchange for a $24 donation. Also, afterwards, a raffle will be held, and Dave Otando Radio Show will be awarding the winner with a gift from the inventory of prosperitymint.com. So again, just go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and you will see the graphic for New Abolitionist Radio. Donate to help fund Carolina Abolitionist contingent trip to D.C. So I had an opportunity to speak to Miss Crystal Roundtree earlier today while she was on her lunch break. Again, she's very, very busy. Just trying to make sure that this event happens and goes off successfully. Some of the things she shared with me behind the scenes is the powers that be are just trying to make it not be a smooth event, and they're trying to throw up certain roadblocks and put certain conditions on us, but guess what? We will not be moved. We're coming, D.C. We're going to be there whether you want us there or not. Ain't no stopping us now. All right. So I had an opportunity to speak with Sister Crystal, and I'm going to pull that up for you right now. So give me a moment for that. Again, you know, BTR community, I think that you just giving a $24 donation to the Abolitionist Fund is worth it for that 1 year membership, which is the regular subscription price for that 1 year. And, you know, the community is gotten more active since when we first launched it. I believe we launched it in August of last year, if I'm not mistaken. If I recall, I was looking at it earlier today. When did BTR community launch? I think it was August the 16th, if I'm not mistaken. I could be mistaken about that. But we got a couple of hundred members, and, you know, it's starting to pick up with more activity among the members, and I could just feel that positive energy in that community. So, you know, welcome to the new members. And if you want to become a member, again, you can get a 1 year subscription for just $24 with a donation to the Abolitionist Fund. Okay, so check that out. You know, and if you just want to go straight to BTRCommunity.com and sign up for a subscription, again, until we reach our target goal, all of those subscriptions is going towards this abolitionist trip anyway. So, you know, it makes a great gift for a friend. You know, if you invite your friends, if you're already in there, invite your friends and tell them what a great cause that they will be helping to support with this historic abolitionist meeting that we will have on August the 19th in Washington, D.C. So I just about got it up. Let me see. Here we go right here. So I'm going to go ahead and cue that up for you. Again, this is my interview from earlier today with Sister Crystal Roundtree of I Am We Ubuntu, which is I think it's IamWeUbuntu.com is the website, but it's the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network that she also helped found, and she again is the lead organizer. So here we go. This is Scotty Reed with the Black Talk Radio News Report and Commentary. On this segment, we are going to speak with Ms. Crystal Roundtree of the North Carolina-based I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, which is a nonprofit human rights organization committed to educating on the effects of racism and classism that has led to a disproportionate number of blacks, new Africans, Latinos, Native American, and poor whites being imprisoned. Crystal Roundtree is the co-founder director of I Am We Prison Advocacy Network and the chairperson of the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Organizing Committee, which has organized the upcoming Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Rally in March, which will take place in Washington, D.C. on August 19, 2017. Thank you for joining us on this segment of BTR News, Crystal.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here today.
How long have you been involved in human rights advocacy concerning people in prison, Crystal, and what motivated you to get involved?
My work in human rights actually started off here in my local community dealing with women and children who had been affected by incarceration, poverty, and domestic violence issues. Over the last 2 years, the focus of my work has more so involved the prisoners and the prison class. It was in doing this work and being in communication with a lot of the brothers and sisters behind the wall that I recognized the importance of this work. And there was really a void there in terms of people advocating on their behalf. And as I mentioned before, I Am We Prison Advocacy Network is dedicated to advocating and addressing so many of those issues that we find going on with the prison class.
In reading the mission statement of I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, I noticed that the advocacy you and the organization are engaged in is on the behalf of all prisoners, regardless of race, gender, class, or religious background. Why do you think it is important to be all-inclusive in your advocacy?
Absolutely. Well, we understand that there is a disproportionate number of people of color affected by these systems. However, all people of all races and ethnicities have become victims of the political effects of modern-day slavery and mass incarceration. So it's important that we include all people. It's not a popular movement by any means, and so we need the support of all who are willing to take up this cause and lend a helping hand into what we're trying to get accomplished. So it's very important that we include everyone in this mission, because we understand that it does affect all people.
I Am We, in partnership with other grassroots organizations, have come together to organize the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Rally and March on August the 19th this year, which is just weeks away. And one of the issues that is mentioned in the event hopes to raise awareness about is the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution. Why is the 13th Amendment central to understanding the many issues related to prisoners' human rights in the United States, which warehouses the world's largest prison population?
You know, the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it's unconstitutional, essentially, because it allows for slavery to exist under a narrow exception for those who have been, quote, duly convicted for a crime. As such, modern-day slavery by way of criminal conviction, it essentially moved slavery from the plantation into the prison system, which, as you just mentioned, has produced the world's largest prison population. The 13th Amendment is also in clear violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations, which states that no one shall be held in slavery servitude, and that the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. And of course, we see that still going on today. We have phone companies, construction companies, banks, surveillance equipment manufacturers, the private prison companies, and scores of others that are profiting in billions of dollars. And essentially turned people, humans, prisoners, into a commodity. We can all agree, I'm sure, that slavery is in fact a human rights violation. And the numbers are staggering. The numbers are absolutely staggering to even imagine the amount of people not only in prison, but as we call the prison class. Over 70 million people in America have criminal records of some type. So the 13th Amendment is a starting point. It is what incentivizes mass incarceration, in our opinion. And so that is a starting point, one of the foundations of producing the world's largest prison population. And so that is why we have chosen to tackle that at this march coming up in just a few weeks.
As I stated, the event will take place on August the 19th, 2017. As you just mentioned, it's just weeks away. Can you share some of the activities that are planned for that day and any additional details you would like to share on how people can support the event and or how to attend?
Certainly. There will be a weekend of event, as we're learning, the organizers, several groups and individuals have decided to host and hold certain events during that weekend. On Friday, the 18th, there will be a meet and greet event. More information can be found about that on the I Am We Prison Advocacy website. But the main event that everyone is looking forward to is Saturday, August 19th. There will be a march portion that will start at 11:30 a.m. at Freedom Plaza. That march will be from Freedom Plaza to Lafayette Park, which is directly in front of the White House, and that is where our rally will take place. And that will be from noon until 5 o'clock. During that event, we hope to have some dynamic speakers speaking about the 13th Amendment, but not the 13th Amendment, the ramifications, police terror that we see in our communities, and all of the other issues that are so important to all of us that we hope to highlight on that particular day. Following that rally, there will be a Black August commemoration event, and I'm very excited about that personally. You know, when we started this, we selected the month of August to recognize and highlight Black August, which is a historical month of prison resistance. And we've had people such as Comrade George Jackson all the way up to Jalil Muttaqim, who is a political prisoner in New York currently, and so many others that have talked about this issue here of ending legalized slavery as well as the 13th Amendment. So in honor and to commemorate those who have presented those issues and all of our freedom fighters that came before us, the month of August was selected to hold this event. So that event, as I just mentioned, will be taking place on Saturday evening. And then on Sunday, there is another Black August type of event that will be taking place. And again, this information can be found at iamweubuntu.com for more specifics about that. One of the important things that I do want to make sure that people understand is that the event itself is an opportunity for us to come together, for us to network, for us to dialogue, for us to bring awareness and education on these issues, but that 95% of the work that is required for us to be successful will take place after the march. So we still need the same, if not more, support going forward. There are all of the details of the post-march game plan have not been settled and sorted out. We are forming a coalition currently to tackle those things, to brainstorm on the best steps for us to take going forward. Currently, there is a petition that has been started by Dr. Merlin Mims with the Organization on Procedural Justice, and the name of that petition is called Stop Slavery Finally. And this petition is speaking to exactly what the march is about, ending legalized slavery, and it's one of the first steps that we will be taking and asking others to take in our attempt to make this constitutional amendment. And this petition will be delivered to the U.S. House of Representatives as well as the U.S. Senate. So we are encouraging all supporters or all people concerned about mass incarceration or mass enslavement, as we like to call it, to definitely take part in signing that petition, as well as staying tuned to other initiatives that will be coming down the pike soon.
One of the demands that is coming out of this movement is that the United States Congress, as you mentioned some, the petition to the representatives, is that the U.S. Congress hold hearings on the 13th Amendment. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that is still part of our after game plan. And we want this to officially be recognized as a human rights violation. And so demanding those congressional hearings on this issue is a starting point for that. And so we are coming together, and that is still certainly a part of our plan, to have those congressional hearings on the 13th, as well as to take this issue before the United Nations. So we are moving forward steadily with that process.
Thank you again for taking time to speak with BTR News about this important gathering. And Crystal, I hope to see you soon in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much, Scotty. It was a pleasure being on today. And if I can say one additional thing, I would like for the listeners to know that this is a very grassroots effort and that we are still in the process of obtaining and requesting donations to host the event. In particular, we are still needing the funds for staging and sound at this point. We do have means of individuals donating, which can be found on the IMWE Ubuntu.com website. So if people do have the means or the abilities to contribute to that, we certainly would appreciate it at this point. And if people would like to get involved or support or join this movement, we encourage them to do so. There will be lots of solidarity events taking place in several cities throughout the country. Please check our website to find out where those locations will be. And if you don't see your city there, consider hosting a solidarity event. Thank you again, Scotty, for having me on the program today. And I look forward to seeing you in Washington as well.
Thank you. This is Scotty Green, Black Talk Radio News.
Now I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where they are still practicing legalized slavery and human trafficking. I say that the term mass incarceration is problematic because it doesn't recognize the fact that this is actually slavery. Plus, it's just easier to say slavery. That's what it is. You should call things what they are, okay? And we come up with these little nicknames for stuff, and it takes away from the seriousness of the issue. Not to say that masses of people getting locked up isn't an issue, but it just takes on a whole another kind of urgency when you call it slavery, because that's what it is. That's not what Scotty's calling it. That's what the 13th Amendment, which is part of the supreme law of the land, the U.S. Constitution, says. So it's not me saying it. It's not Crystal saying it. It's not Max saying it. It's not Johannes saying it. It's not any of these other modern abolitionists saying it. It's what the Constitution says. So you're not going to be arguing with me if you disagree. You're going to be arguing with the writers of the 13th Amendment. Now, I mean, I want to take it back again. You know, that was a pre-recorded interview. If you have any questions that I can answer, obviously Crystal's not here, but if you have any questions or comments based on our interview with her or anything else related, you can give us a call at 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. Hit ** to unmute yourself. I will see you, and I'll call out your area code or your name if I know it. So, yeah, but let me just say again, you know, thank you to Crystal for taking the initiative to plan this rally and this march. And I'm just very honored to be a part of it. Like I told her, if all I can do is stack some chairs, I will be there in support of the movement. You know, because in order to be a leader, you got to be willing to serve. So in any capacity that I could serve, I offered that. And to my surprise, I was chosen as one of the moderators of the event. So I'm just hoping that people will donate so that we can make this successful. We are small organizations. She is here in North Carolina. I am we. Prison Advocacy Network, another state nonprofit, just like Black Talk Media Project. And so, you know, when you're a small organization who don't want entanglements and with the federal government or want to be prohibited in what you can speak on, that's why many of us don't get our 501c3s. But some people have this mistaken information that they got from somewhere that you can't write off what you donate to U.S.-based nonprofits if they don't have a 501c3. Again, I've been operating for going on 9 years as a state nonprofit. And while I don't apply for federal government grants like Baba Jahi mentioned in the first hour, there was another North Carolina nonprofit that had a 501c3 that got a rather large grant from the federal government to promote participation in the 2010 census. And we applied for that. Well, first they contacted me and let me know that was available because I had contacts with them from interviewing some of their attorneys about some of the issues they were working on. And so when they got that grant, they created sub-grants. And I was able to get a sub-grant from them to promote the census. The Black Talk Media Project, that is, was able to get a sub-grant. And so what I'm saying all this to say is that a lot of people putting in hard work, we're not getting the funds that a lot of these other more prominent organizations are getting. We're not getting those funds because we refuse to compromise on a lot of issues. You know, the old saying goes, he who pays the piper names the tune. And nobody outside of the family, the BTR network family, is going to be dictating any tunes to us. And so, you know, I have maintained as long as I have been able to for the past 9 years, relying on the creator to provide. But of course, the creator needs people to work through, and that's you. So I want to thank those who have given. But please, this is a historic event. I mean, I can't state that enough. There hasn't been an event of this nature, of an abolitionist, of a slavery abolitionist event, to take place in this country since before 1865. This is indeed historic, okay? And so please, please give what you can. I know the economy isn't doing so well for the common people like it's doing for, you know, your big Wall Streeters and billionaire bankers and industrialists and what have you. But if we put our pennies together, our small resources together, hey, we can pull off some great things. So please donate if you can. Again, you know, Black Talk Media Project is helping to obtain the sound system that she spoke about. So we're offering a 1 year subscription to btrcommunity.com to those who donate the $24 to the Abolitionist Fund, which is the campaign fundraiser is hosted on our network. All right, so if we don't have any questions or calls, I want to transition to a related subject. Truth Out is a magazine or online publication that I think puts out a lot of good information. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know a lot about their organizational structure, but I have known about the articles that they would publish over the years. And they share a lot of great information. It's not mainstream media. It's not CNN. It's not MSNBC. They are not afraid to speak truth to power. They are not worried about losing advertisers if they talk about this or that issue and what have you. So they came out with an article that actually mentions the upcoming march. And so we want to thank James Kilgore of Truth Out for filing this report, which was filed Saturday, August the 5th. It is titled, "Will Altering the 13th Amendment Bring Liberation to the Incarcerated 2.3 million? Again, the title of this is, "Will Altering the 13th Amendment Bring Liberation to the Incarcerated 2.3 million? Now, Mr. Kilgore did an excellent job in presenting the thoughts and the convictions of people actually on the ground working on this issue. He did not reach out to some celebrity figure. He didn't reach out to people you normally see on corporate media and identified as experts or working on this or working on that. No, he reached out to the grassroots. And there is a lot of great information in this. I will share it again in BTR community. I shared it earlier, but I'm going to share it again on the BTR news profile in BTRcommunity.com. But there was one section that concerned me at the end. Again, he did his job as a journalist. He reached out to different activists and advocates and got their perspective. He also shared a lot of factual information concerning 21st century slavery and human trafficking, lots of laws and legalese that he points to. It's a great article, but I took issue with a couple of things that were said by some activists or advocates that I never heard of. And, you know, not that I'm trying to say anything that there are nobodies called Scotty ain't never heard of them. That's not what I mean by that. I'm just stating the fact that I don't know these people. Okay, I know some of the other people that's mentioned or know of them, but this particular person I had never heard of. And in the section, it's the very last section of this article. It says, "Who do people in prison work for?" Now, he shares a lot of factual information about who they're working for, who these modern day victims of slavery are working for. He gives some statistics and some laws and things of that nature. But he talked to this person, and I'm trying to find, okay, yeah, I found it. And this person is a former political prisoner. This is the first time I've been made aware of his name. And this is not me taking an antagonistic view of what he has to say. No, he seems to be an ally. It's just that I just don't agree with what he's saying in this particular piece. So let me just read what I'm talking about. From the Truth Out article, again, let me pull up that title again and give thanks to Mr. James Kilgore for writing the article and publicizing the upcoming rally on the 13th Amendment and prisoners' human rights, which will be in Washington, D.C., August the 19th, in Lafayette Park, in the park across the street from the White House that victims of slavery built. Name of the article is, "Will Altering the 13th Amendment Bring Liberation to the Incarcerated 2.3 million. So let me jump back down to that section where Mr. Cisco Torres's thoughts are being shared here on this particular issue. So it goes on to say, lastly, there is an entire layer of people in prison who do not work at all. This includes the roughly 90,000 people in solitary confinement. I must point out right here, this is Scotty speaking, that solitary confinement has been judged by the international community to be torture. All right, it's torture. The UN actually sent an observer here, what was that man's name? They call him UN Rapporteurs. I forget his name. It's been a couple of years, but he toured the prisons here in the United States and looked at solitary confinement and condemned them and said this amounts to torture. This is torture by international standards. So roughly 90,000 people are being tortured in the United States is what we might as well just come out and say. So it says virtually all of the nation's political prisoners, he's talking about that 90,000, as well as those who are disabled or beyond working age. Former political prisoner Cisco Torres sees mobilization around eliminating the exclusion clause, he's talking about the 13th, as viable, but thinks political energy could be better spent on issues like sentencing or reducing financing for local police. He fears that even if the exclusion clause is removed, they will come up with a different method of incarceration. So, Mr. Torres, with all due respect, sir, you're a victim of this system. You're a political prisoner. I don't know why you were enslaved as a political prisoner, but I'm sure if they enslaved you as a political prisoner, that it was something that USA Inc. didn't want you to be involved in, okay? So with all due respect, sir, to your sacrifice on these issues is I have to respectfully disagree with you. You know, just because they come up with something different, you know, that's how, I don't want to say that this is, I don't want to compare it to any kind of game because we're dealing with people's lives here. But I'm going to use the analogy of the chess board. You make a move, they make a counter move. You make a move, they make a counter move. Okay? Until there's a winner. So just because they may think of a counter to come up with a new form of slavery, if we get the 13th Amendment either entirely abolished, because it should be without saying that involuntary servitude and slavery should not exist, period. So it seemed like, but given the history of this country and the Civil War, I understand why they had to put that into law. But that exception clause is a problem. And just because they may come up with a counter to that move does not mean we should not make the move. I mean, how can you hope to win if you don't make moves? That just seems like common sense to me, sir. That's just logical, sir. I can't sit there and let the enemy keep advancing and advancing and advancing on me, and I never do anything to counter what they're doing, even to go on my own offensive, okay? So that just doesn't make sense to me, sir. So I respectfully disagree with you. That, you know, we can also, you raised the issue, or I'm acting like he's on the phone with me, but Mr. Torres is raising the issue that he sees mobilization around eliminating this exclusion clause is viable. So he admits that it's viable, but he thinks that that political energy could be better spent. Sir, again, I have to disagree, and we can walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. You know, I can work on this campaign in terms of educating people on this new technology called new media technology, how they can start their own radio stations and platforms and provide them service. But at the same time, I can still be an abolitionist and work towards abolishing slavery. We are very complex, very intelligent human beings, and we don't have to just focus on one thing at a time. But I think that it's reasonable to say if we're going to focus on one thing, that first thing and most important thing is to legally abolish slavery. No society that's calling itself just, and I'm thinking of the society that I would like to see, not the one that actually exists, but the one that I would like to play a role in bringing about, is that no just society, no so-called civilized people would codify slavery in any manner, legalizing it. it just doesn't work. And so we're talking about the soul of this nation being founded on slavery, the stolen energy and labor of individuals. So some lazy people, some criminals could profit off of that captive energy. Okay? So we know that's the foundations, but sometimes you gotta rip up the foundation if it's cracked. You don't build, if you have an old house like the old house that was sitting right where I'm at right now, that to the point it had been standing damn near 75 years, all wood, that couldn't be repaired and it had to be torn down. But that foundation also could not be repaired, and we had to put in a new foundation before we put in a new house. Because to put a new house on a broken foundation doesn't make sense at all. So we're talking about the foundation of this nation being founded on slavery, and it's still existing. This is a crime against humanity. I can't think of any other way to describe it. So I can't think of any better way to spend my energy than to move to abolish 21st century slavery and human trafficking in this country. Now, he goes on to write, because I'm taking issue with this as well. Additionally, Torres stresses that decarceration without allocating additional resources to oppressed communities condemns people released from prison to live at the absolute margins of survival. Even if we let them go, where do these people go? He says. Now, I'm going to stop it right there before I read on. Look, the abolitionist movement pre-1865 wasn't concerned about where the victims of slavery was going to go if we get them free off of these plantations. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm trying to be respectful here, because I don't know much about this man or his background. And maybe it's just a simple matter of he has a different perspective than what me and some of my comrades have. But I also know about COINTELPRO. Okay? And I'm not calling this man an agent, but I'm saying I would expect an agent to say something like this. And it just could be, again, that we're having a disagreement on this issue. But it doesn't make sense to me that I would say, well, if I don't have a job or in a place to live for a victim of slavery, I might as well leave them in slavery. That makes absolutely zero sense, sir. And you say, and again, yes, we must allocate those resources to oppressed communities, but I would also say they wouldn't be such fertile slave hunting grounds if they had the resources to begin with. It's because these are oppressed communities that they are a prime hunting ground for modern day slave catchers and human traffickers. So for you to say, even if we let them go, where do these people go? They go home to their family, sir. That's where they go home to. They go home to the communities that they were kidnapped from. That's where they go home to. And we have organizations and people out there that are working on the issues of helping. I don't want to use the systems labels, but they are helping former victims of slavery find gainful employment. So what you're saying, sir, makes absolutely zero sense to me. It might make sense to some other people, but it seems to me, sir, that you're coming up with excuses to keep slavery in place. I could be wrong. That's just my interpretation of what I'm reading here. We got Brother Otis who would like to chime in. Thank you, Otis, for calling in earlier and engaging with our guest, Brother Baba Jahi. I love it when our elders get together, because I can just sit back and learn from y'all. So I appreciate y'all sharing, you know, what it was like during that time period and the mobilization against the system from where the positions that y'all found yourselves in. But Otis, what do you have to say about what I've been discussing thus far in this second hour?
I shared that article as well, Scotty, and I could hear your voice as I was picking it apart when I first read it and posted it on Facebook. But I was going to say, I had a discussion with several of my peers just about that article, and I told them one of the things you could start with is you can move those damn jobs out of the federal prison system, put them back in the mainstream so some of these employees can have some employment outside that system. You'll knock out half of the people that are working will leave prison and be productive citizens right off the start. You can also start by making this government do what it needs to do, and I'll try to be kind of straightforward without getting into too much detail. People don't realize in 30 years, this country, because of corporate interests taking over government, have systemically moved jobs out of this country to poor countries. That is one of the reasons that the prison industrial complex has accelerated slavery, because there were no jobs. And can you imagine, if I play devil advocate, can you imagine taking 2 million people and putting them out here with no jobs? You can't hide unemployment then. You can hide unemployment when you take 2 million and put them in jail and only leave another 3 million unemployed. So the people that want to put their, quote, practicality above human rights, they follow the same logic that the people used when they took the jobs away. There's nothing productive about allowing a corporation that does nothing but make money to just keep seeking cheap, cheap, cheap. All value is not money. The Europeans have it down. A lot of the people in Spain had it down until Wall Street talked them into doing this debt stuff that's got us austerity. The bottom line is, it made more sense when corporations were doing what they did in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and the early 50s to have steady growth and steady profit while having a fully employed workforce. The problems come in this country when they keep trying to do cheap, cheap, cheap. And the truth is, they ran from EPA regulations and all the things that it takes to keep this country running properly. Having fully employed families, structural families together because there's employment. There's a reason that prisons are being filled up. They're being filled up to try to keep civil action, to try to keep civil unrest from taking over this country. If people really realize how bad it is, and that most of us are living off of credit rather than income, they wouldn't be putting that foolishness out.
This is foolishness to me. And again, I don't know what this man suffered in prison. I'm trying to be respectful, and it's not personal to him, but I'm attacking his words and his views. It makes absolutely no sense for me to say, well, it'd be good to let people out of slavery, but if they ain't got nowhere to go, they might well stay where they at. Or like, we got to create the jobs first before we can let them out. Well, how about giving them the jobs and paying them a living wage for the jobs they doing right now?
That's exactly what I'm saying. The jobs should leave the prison system when they leave the prison system. These corporations should not be allowed to get away, like I said a couple of weeks when I called in. They're not paying any FICA. They're not paying workman's comp. They're not paying anything.
No Social Security.
Corporations move these jobs back out into the real world and employ a person in the streets. Why is it you can't get a job till you go to prison? It makes no sense.
Right. And even if they're not, I do want to point this out because it's raised in the article. Even if they don't get assigned a job, profit still being made off their body, as Crystal said, they've been turned into commodities, traded on the stock exchange, because slavery was never abolished. So, I mean, this is ridiculous, but he goes on to say, He views, he says, he stresses the decarceration without allocating additional resources to oppressed communities, condemns people released from prison to live at the absolute margins of survival like they ain't already. If we let them go, where do these people go, he says. His view also highlight the fact that amending the 13th could lead to some relief for people in prison, but may do very little for the millions of loved ones of incarcerated people, overwhelmingly women and children, who have also been critically impacted by mass incarceration. So again, this is some ignorant, I want to cuss. The 13th could lead to some relief, but it may do very little for the millions of loved ones of, man, see, this is just absolute nonsense, man. This is nonsense. I don't know if this guy has an organization who's funding him, but I'm sorry. I got to keep it real on Black Talk Radio News. I find Mr. Torres to be very suspect. Very suspect in his critical thinking process, or suspect of his motives for saying this garbage. It's the reason families are destroyed when the mothers and the fathers are put into prison slavery, sir. And mothers, women, are the fastest growing demographic of new prison slaves in this country. In the past few years, their enslavement rates have increased by over 800%. And on the state level, the vast majority of women who are in prison have at least one child. So you want to talk about amending the 13 could lead to some relief for people in prison, but do very little for the millions of loved ones? I can't find any logic in what this man says. So he goes on to say, for the moment, Torres favors mobilizing behind quote-unquote tangible goals, like the treatment of incarcerated people or the recognition of political prisoners. Look, I started Political Prisoner Radio long time ago. Unfortunately, I have been unable to sustain that project, but I do maintain that Facebook page and as able share information about political prisoners. So, you know, definitely we want recognition for all political prisoners. But here's the thing. It all points back to the slavery, dog. Slavery. They are political prisoners because they fought against slavery or an element of slavery, even if they didn't know that's what they were fighting against. For him, it says, the central problem is, here we go, American capitalism and how we fight it. Not merely amending the Constitution again. No one said that the end game or the game was over once the exception clause for slavery and involuntary servitude is removed. That's not the end game, dog. I can't think of anything else to say other than it needs to happen. How the hell can you live in a country or be comfortable with a country that's legally practicing slavery while telling us lies through movies, through public education, that it was abolished? You know?
Got it.
Jesus. Got it. Wait, man. Go ahead, Otis.
Another part of the discussion I was having with my friends is, people act like money just works in a vacuum. They don't mind paying $50,000 to $70,000 per state to incarcerate people, but they don't want to redistribute that money, redistribute it when you let the people out. The average income for Americans is about $30,000 a year. For the amount of money that they're spending to incarcerate one person, you actually can give two people a universal income to put them back on the street, considering 95% of them have gone to jail under plea bargains, which means at least 50% of them probably weren't guilty of the crime in the first place.
Right, right.
So the money, and what gets me is people want to call it socialism, and I do a lot of research. I just listened to a lady named Carolyn Anderson, a black lady from Emory University, talking at the Kennedy Center a library talking about this very same thing, that America's never really thought about this kind of social program as communism until the 1950s and 60s, when the Republican Party Southerners start associating it with fighting the communists.
Mm-hmm.
The very same time when Malcolm X them started going overseas, and they associated all kinds of social programs with communism. Mm-hmm. And it seems to rest in people's mind now that somehow to take your taxpayer money and help citizens is wrong, but it's okay for that same taxpayer money to be unlimited profit for a corporation.
It's who's pure, enslaving it's, somebody.
Exactly. It makes no sense. People don't get it. If you pay taxes and you're working in a system and corporations can't work without people, why shouldn't that money be spent on the value and quality of your life versus being kept in a cage? $50,000 to $70,000 per inmate in 50 states to keep 2.3 million people in jail, but you don't, and the money goes to a corporation. But you don't want to give the citizen a job because that's an unnecessary cost. It's pure insanity.
It's slavery. That's what it is. It's slavery. So, you know, I come to the end of the broadcast, but, you know, I don't know if Mr. Cisco Torres, I didn't see his name on the list of speakers, but if he's there, on August the 19th at the abolitionist rally, Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March and Rally at Lafayette Park across the street from that White House that slavery built, I would love to meet him and have this conversation with him face to face. Hopefully I can bring him around to my view. If not, he can kick rocks down the fucking road. I'm sorry, he can kick rocks down the road, because this is nonsense what he talking about. There should be no justification for keeping somebody in slavery, and that is what you're doing. All right, Otis, did you have anyone? Okay, Otis, Otis done with his comment. I will bring a conclusion to this broadcast of BTR News. Remember, for the live broadcast, I will be on every Tuesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, God willing, for 2 hours. Also, subscribe to blacktalkradionetwork.com, where you can get updates of any podcasts I may also issue during the week. You can get it delivered to your email, along with other independent black media producers who are publishing content on blacktalkradionetwork.com. I want to thank my guest, Baba Jahi. I want to thank Crystal Roundtree for speaking with me earlier today so that we could bring that information to our listening audience tonight. So recognize the fact that you do indeed live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there, and casualties are being created every day. And that this country, which was founded on slavery, is still founded on slavery, and a lot of people are employed by the tentacles of slavery. But I think that we can do a whole lot better and create a just society that actually practices liberty and justice for all. This is Scotty Reed, Black Talk Radio News, signing off. Peace.